Good morning, Vertical. We're so excited to be back with you this morning, albeit through this digital platform. This is odd for me. I usually look forward to Sunday mornings because we get to see you guys, we get to shake your hands out in the lobby. We may not be doing that for a while though, and so we're glad that you're tuning in with us here. If you would, if you're on Facebook Live, if you're on YouTube, comment down below, tell us where you are, who you're with, if you're with your family. You can even comment and add somebody that you wish you were getting to, you know, have coffee with them this morning. Let's just keep that community up because we are so looking forward to being back with you guys and we miss you all a lot. If you've been like me and you're driving around town, having to go get groceries or whatever, there's a weird feeling around town right now. And I wrote last week in a blog post that, you know, this is historic and we get to be a part of it. And that's kind of easy to do in a blog post. But the truth is that when we're driving around town, when you're driving on I-55 at 7 in the morning and there's nobody else on the freeway, it has a bit of that Will Smith, I Am Legend apocalyptic view. And while we know there is light at the end of the tunnel and that this will come to an end and we will all get to be together again, it would be ignorant to say that this is not a weird time that we're living in. What's good about that, though, and why I'm excited for what we're going into this morning is we can remember that our experiences are not completely unique to where we are right now, right? There are plenty of times in Scripture when we see God in light of disaster use that for his own purposes. And today, the story that we're going to be starting today and over the next month isn't going to be any different than that. God's activity is visible in desperate times, and the story that we're jumping into in this new series, The Enemy's News, is a perfect example of what that looks like. Now, in this series, we are going to be examining and talking about a character named Esther. And I felt the estrogen come through the screen at me whenever I said her name, right? There are women all over that love to study Esther, and she's a great character that we get to study. But I do want to take just a moment and kind of clear up any misconception that the story of Esther is by any means just feminine, right? I think for a long time, I had a view of the story of Esther that it was kind of a dainty, cookie-cutter, Disney story of this woman in the Bible. And that's not the case at all. The more that the teaching team and I have been looking at the story of Esther and reading about her, we've realized that her story kind of takes place in more of a Wild West scenario. There's a lot of craziness happening around her, and that's exemplified in that it took place in Iran and around 470 BC. Now, Iran isn't a good place for women now, right? Much less at the time. And all of the story is taking place and is showing us that it's a very gritty point in time. I was telling Ben the other day that if they made the story of Esther into a movie, I swear Quentin Tarantino would be the one that's directing it, right? It has these, you know, just dense pieces of suspenseful dialogue, and there's violence, and there are undertones in this story that would keep you from letting your kids watch it, right? There are drinking parties, there's lots of sex, there's violence, there's murder, there's things that are happening in this story that should remind us that this is a very real story that took place. And it's not just inspiration, you know, for you to monogram that you were made for a time such as this, right? That's not what we're talking about. The story of Esther is actually, in a lot of ways, not even written as, you know, a moral to-do list for the people in the Old Testament. This was taking place at a very dire time in history for the people of God. And even the main characters are not abiding by general rules or laws that God had given his people. They were acting out of a place of desperation, right? And so when we look at the story of Esther, we need to remember that this should be viewed as a way for us to operate in dire situations when God's activity isn't evident, which is exactly where we find ourselves today. And so I'm going to dive in. I don't have a whole lot of time. I'm going to dive into this story of Esther. And even through the beginning of this story in chapters 1 and 2, we see that all of this just grittiness, like I said before, is exemplified through this king, The story of Esther, the reason that she is able to be the hero of this story is because of a role that this king had just made vacant, right? He wanted his wife to come into one of his drinking parties and entertain his friends, and she refused to do it. And so he said, you know what? I'm done with Queen Vashti. I need to bring in a new queen. And so this king conjures up this contest with some of his men for all the young women in the area of Susa that Esther lived in to be brought, all of these young women, these beautiful young women, to be brought in before him, and he would choose a new wife that could please him the way that he wanted. And so that's where we meet Esther. That's when we get to see her. And so in chapter 2, verse 7, I'm going to start there, and I'll explain a little bit as I go. But it says, Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, who he had brought up because she had neither father or mother. She was an orphan. This woman, who is also known as Esther, had a lovely figure and was beautiful. And Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. Verse 8. When the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many young women were brought to the citadel, the center of Susa, and put under the care of Haggai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem. She pleased him and won his favor. Now pause, because the next few verses are basically just going to give us some insight into this process that would be the next 12 months of Esther's life. And now I want to make sure we understand, I don't want anybody to miss the details of what's happening here. Esther, an orphan who most scholars believe is a teenager at the time, they think she's about age 14, is taken whether by her uncle Mordecai because he thought it would be better for her in the long run, or taken by the king's men because they just saw that she was beautiful out and about in public, and placed in the citadel with all these other young women. The citadel that we now see is actually functioning as a harem. And that's not a weird translation from Hebrew to English. It is a harem. What is happening to Esther, again, at age 14, is that she has been taken and essentially put into the sex trade. Now, that's a very real thing, and this is a very real, it's a disaster that's happening in Esther's life. This isn't something that, again, that you would want your kids watching on TV, but it's a real story that's taking place in her life. And we see that she goes through a 12-month grooming process or beautification process so that she can be made the most pleasurable for the king. This is a very weird situation, but once we jump back into verse 17, we see now the king was attracted to Esther more than any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Now, I'm reading through this and I'm wondering, you know, if I'm Esther and I can't see the end of this story and I don't know the way that all of this turns out, I don't know that God is going to end up using her in big, big ways for his people, to save his people. If I'm just in Esther's situation and I see that the king has decided that I'm attractive enough to be put into this position, I am probably wondering, is this actually something that I want? Is this actually something that we want? Because Esther has her whole life ahead of her. She may be able to get over this terrible year and just mark it as that and get on with her life and be able to live it out and be happy in who she is. But because she's been chosen by this king, she is put into a situation that is very uncertain. She's going to have questions about herself and what she's supposed to do. The things that she's going to be made to do are not something that she's probably comfortable with. It is a very uncertain situation. And it's hard to celebrate that future victory that we know is going to come later on whenever life is currently seeming so uncertain for Esther. And that's the truth of us too. If I can make that parallel, I don't think it's liberal. For most of us, we're in a situation right now that is very uncertain. And while we know God is going to bring good out of it, and we know that he's going to be victorious, it is hard to make myself celebrate on a daily basis what a victory that is eventually going to come when right now my days are seeming so uncertain. And that's exactly where we're seeing Esther, and that's exactly why we can kind of get into this story where she is. Because the truth is that Esther is experiencing a very real personal crisis, probably an identity crisis. And she's going to be asking herself questions like any woman would in this case, where she's being forced into something so ugly. None of this was my fault. Am I to blame for this? Do I bring this on myself? Is there a future past this hurt for me? Why is this happening to me? And to compound on all of this is the elephant in the room that God's name is not mentioned in the book of Esther. And while we know that God is active in the book of Esther, we're having to put on different lenses and read between the lines and see where God's activity is in this story. Esther, well, unlike any other story, we would be able to see a dialogue between God and Esther where he's instilling peace in her, where he's giving her hope. But what we see from the story of Esther is that she is having this personal crisis, and it seems like she's doing it alone. And I think that we can empathize with Esther in a lot of ways. When God's presence is lacking in our own lives begin to look unrecognizable. Again, without feeling like I'm trying to just pull something too much out of Esther's story, I think a lot of us can relate to that. Right now, many of us are in situations where we are very uncertain and we're not exactly sure what is going to come out of this. And when God's presence is seemingly lacking from that situation, it only brings more questions up for me personally. Many of us are not recognizing our own lives right now. Lots of us have been broken from our daily rhythms. We're not able to recognize what our identity would typically be in. Vertical Church is full of people who are life givers to this community. We have healthcare professionals who are being stressed right now. We have teachers who aren't able to teach. We have people who are helping others with their finances who aren't being able to give them hope like they used to. And for many of us, this would be so disheartening, but even more so if we couldn't see God in the midst of that. And the reality is that for a lot of us right now, we're probably struggling to see God in the midst of our current situation. What do we do with that? The most troubling thing that we could have right now is wondering where God's presence is in all of it. What do we do as Vertical Church in the middle of that? Well, that's one reason why I'm glad for the next few weeks we're going to be looking at the story of Esther. Because what I love about this story of Esther is that she refused to allow her situations to inhibit her actions. And I think that that's such a good model for what we can be doing. There's so many questions about what's going on in our country and the world right now. And it's a given that if we are followers of Christ, people are going to be asking us, where is God? What lenses do I need to put on to see the presence of God in all of this? But the truth is that we know where God is. We know that he acts out of tragedy. And we know that even if personally we aren't hearing him well right now, if that's the case for you, we know that just like the story of Esther, he wants to use us, as he often does, he wants to use his people to bring about good in the end of this. We just have to be able to get past the uncertainty to act as we know that we should. We have to be comfortable looking for God in situations where we might not otherwise. And while we are living in a tragedy right now, a health crisis, we have to be confident in the fact that God wants to use us in that. God is still working. On a personal level, even, I've been gaining a lot of encouragement from the fact that we haven't had Amplify in a month, and that is heartbreaking to me. I hate that. I was talking with small group leaders just yesterday about how much we miss being with the students. But on the flip side of that, since we've had Amplify, we have had two young men dedicate their lives to Christ. They've accepted Christ's gift of grace for them. And so what that lets me know is that just because things are not going the way that I planned and the way that I would typically see God moving doesn't mean that God is not moving. God is living and God is active in our situation. We just have to be willing to see him do it in ways that we typically wouldn't want to. So Vertical, while I'm wrapping this up, and I will say we're going to be talking about this later in the week on the Vertical Plus podcast. So if you want more information on this story of Esther, please tune into that because we're going to get to talk about it a lot more. But to Vertical Church, I just want to remind you of our purpose and our role in this whole situation in case you are like Esther and you're wondering where your identity is in all of this. Vertical, we are life givers. We know where that source of joy comes from, and it's our duty to bring that to people. We are hope dispensers. I said in the blog last week that went out for Vertical, people aren't lacking news feeds. People aren't lacking information about this virus. What they're lacking is hope, and it is our job to bring that from God to people. And last, people are lacking peace. And that's what we want to be able to give them right now. John 16:33 said, Jesus told them, look, in this world we're going to have trouble, but don't fear because I have overcome the world. And we know that. We know that even if the way that God is working right now is not evident, in the end, God has overcome the world, and we can be confident in that. And we can count it as victory even when we haven't seen the victory yet. And so I just want to encourage you and let you know that Ben was exactly right last week when he said that God sees you. Those names of God, God sees you and he knows where you are. And if you are spending time with God on a daily basis and you see people that need that hope in your life, be quick to give that to them as well. Be quick to be a community that is uplifting people around them and serving people around them in a time when not many people are doing that. We do not have to doubt our identity because we know who wins in the end, just like the story of Esther. We may be in an unfortunate situation right now, but we know that a victory is coming on the other end. And so today, as we're wrapping up, I just want to pray for you guys. As a pastor here at Vertical Church, we've been praying for you guys throughout the week, and I want to do so publicly now just so that we can do that together. Father God, thank you for this group of people that's gathered online right now, Lord. Things are unfortunate in our country right now, God, but I am energized by the fact that this community is not broken over that, God. I'm energized by the fact that there are people FaceTiming and Zooming and meeting throughout the week through digital presence and just able to keep that community, God. I pray that we would be a light of hope in the community around us that is having a hard time finding hope right now. I pray that we would be very open about the fact that we know that we have victory in you coming, God. It's not foolish, it's faithful, Lord, and we are thankful for that, God. I pray that we would proclaim that very loudly for each to hear and then follow that by serving the people that are around us, Lord. You've been so good to us here, God, and we know that you will continue to be good to us through this tragedy, God. We only pray that, like Esther, we have the courage to act even when we're unsure about what's going to happen, Lord. Use us, God. We know you want to. Use Vertical Church. We love you and praise you. Amen.
And then there were three
people and episodes.
Oh my gosh, I wasn't even ready for that.
It worked out.
I'm here all day.
We got the this is essentially about to be the Hanger podcast with the three of us on here, but
it
that's
was
okay.
Part of our plan, a whole takeover.
Wait, what is the Hanger podcast?
Oh yeah, sorry, that's a separate entity now. Okay. My bad.
Yeah, that's right. Episode three, following up Austin's teaching on Esther.
Yeah,
his beginnings of Esther. Which, by the way, you guys should really start saying the series titles in your talks, because y'all are just saying, yeah, we got this talk on Esther today.
I thought I said it. I said it at least twice.
Are you sure?
I did. We just moved the graphic, right?
I may have missed it.
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't recall.
Nobody listens to me.
It depends on which take you did it, because you may have done it in a different take, and we used the very last one.
I did do a couple takes.
It's one of the joys of having shorter teaching is you can, after 12, 13 minutes, you can say, yeah, I'd rather do that again.
See, at some point, I'm just doing it to make Chase wait longer for
me. No, you're not. I know you're not, because you're not that bad of a friend.
Well, Chase just is burning through so much paper back there in his Christian journal, taking notes on the whole teaching.
Really? I'm doubling over these bullet points that I've already made, because we're on take seven. He said it different that time. Do I tweak this bullet point or what?
I sent a message when Chase was editing one of the weeks. And what did you say? I've watched it. I learned something new every time.
Oh, yeah. I put it out. It was the very first one you put out, and you were like, you learned something new, right? And I was like, every time I watch it.
Man, that's that lead pastor treatment, because when I'm recording, Chase goes, you get zero feedback.
Zero feedback.
Oh, no. Ben and I have an understanding that I'm not listening while he's recording.
Good.
Well, this goes back years, because yes, we recorded on Thursdays for what felt like 4 years. It was lengthy, wasn't it?
It felt like 4 years because it was 4 years.
It was 4 years. And in the beginning, it was like, we're going to record, then we're going to have people in the room give me feedback.
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, it was literally Chase in the back of the room on Instagram, and I'm teaching to a camera, like, let's get through this.
With an empty room.
Yes.
I cannot explain how miserable it is to have to teach to an empty room.
It's pretty bad. And people understand, too. Like, I was having a talk with someone this past week, and they were like, man, I can tell there's nobody there, because it just kind of feels like you're plowing through your script and getting from one point to the next.
You guys do pause a lot for crowd reactions. I will say that. You guys are those type of speakers where it's like, it's very interactional, which is, we like that anyway. We try to do that on regular Sundays. Rest in peace.
RIP.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, that is part of our dynamic, and I think it really makes it stand out. Like, I know we don't have time for this, but
we have as much time as we want. It's just the three of us.
Yeah. This is our podcast.
Right. I've been watching a lot of churches online, just trying to learn things and make sure that we're keeping paces. And, man, you can really tell the guys that normally are just, they have a script, they're going to go through it, and they're a little bit nervous, and they're not worried about, let's make this a communal deal. Like, we're sharing in this experience together. And at Vertical, that's like our main thing. You know, we're here together in this room. The worship is interactive. Then you get to teaching. It's also interactive. So it's been quite a jolt to be on video these past few weeks. And I'm very, very hopeful that it'll end sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't feel like we're doing a bad job. It's just not very enjoyable.
Yeah, I'll say. But that's okay. It's fun. Sometimes.
No. Yeah. It's fun. It's fun because you're not having to do it.
It's fun on Sunday when I'm on my couch, but that's about it.
Okay. Let's take a final vote here, because I've got to record. When do I record again?
Tomorrow.
I don't know. Sometime soon.
Tomorrow?
Am I going to...
how much we're trying to break the fourth wall.
That's right. Yeah. At some point. Am I going to wear shorts? This seems like it's an accidental thing that's gaining some traction.
Well, this is coming up pre-Easter, so you definitely will be doing Easter teaching between this recording and actual Easter. And we all know that you dress in your Easter best. And what that means in the South is real nice plaid cargo shorts.
Oh, buddy.
At least one powder blue and a yellow.
Oh, man. I don't have any cargo shorts, but I do have a pair of blue, almost pastel blue Old Navy shorts.
You haven't worn those in a long time.
Yeah.
I remember when you busted them out, though.
Chase also takes notes on Ben's wardrobe.
Well, he's changed it like three times since Vertical launched. He's like, now he's in the Red Wing phase, and we all know what that looks like.
Yeah.
What has never diminished, though, is the Filson-style hat that you have on right
Correct,
now.
Correct, yeah. We started
with know that is just a Filson. Look at that.
Yeah, we went to...
OG.
We started in the Converse phase.
We did do that. All of us, actually.
Yep. And then made a transition into the slightly European footwear phase. Now I'm made in America, so
yeah.
So you kind of grew sneakers out your beard, and now you've got the USA Red Wing. Is that the...
Yeah, well, let's shoot square.
When you go bald... Oh, wait, no, we don't get sued.
Yeah. When you go bald, you only have a couple of options.
Mm.
And one of those options...
Get jacked.
Is owning it, joining a gym, and trying to find some other thing that's going to detract from your bald head. Plus, I've got cancer head, which, while we're going about it, you know, it's not just that I went bald.
Well, this opened up quick.
Yeah, here we go. It's not just that I'm bald. It's that I took radiation, and for some reason, the hair didn't grow back, and I've got this, like, major league V thing that happens in the back.
Yeah.
People
always say that, like, they want... I stand up for you a lot without you knowing.
About his, like, hairline?
Yeah, I really do. People will ask, like, Ben will go to a local barber called Noble Barber, which we've been going to for quite a while now.
Love it.
But he gets like a very, very complex buzz cut.
Yes.
And anytime Ben says, yeah, I got a haircut appointment today I got to get to, behind his back, people are always like, what hair is he getting cut? And I'm like, you don't understand. It is balding in reverse. And you don't know it because he covers it so well.
My favorite comment was from a friend of mine, Steven. He said, right after I shaved my head for the first time, He's like, oh, thank goodness, man. I didn't know where to look.
That's a good friend.
Well,
that's
the kind of friends I have. Steven.
Yeah, it's a good friend. Well, but enough about my male pattern baldness.
Yeah, we're 6 minutes in.
Yeah. So where are we headed today? I think we already said it, but which part of what Austin talked about are we going to talk about?
I don't know. We're being real loose today. We'll be full disclosed right now. Well, maybe we should let Austin pick.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate, but to be loose these days. I mean, here's another thing about the COVID-19. People who are too formal in their approach are just starting to kind of chap me a little bit.
It makes your eyes roll so far back in your head. They do a full 360 rotation.
Yeah, I've been a COVID nap. Wow. I've been unfollowing people like crazy to do that. I'm like, I can't even handle any more of you. So, okay, well, if we're talking about Esther, Ben, you and I have talked a little bit about this just kind of in preparation for teaching. But I'm curious, what were y'all's kind of, I don't know, initial responses to the story? We kind of set Esther up in a different light, at least I hope so. That was kind of the goal. I mean, what have you heard from people about their response to us setting up Esther's character in that way?
Well, generally you kind of hear the most positive, the people that reach out are the positive people in general.
What, for you, really, though?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I get people just bashing the no, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So, I mean, it's behind the scenes that people complain. But I think for me, what struck me is that I've heard this story literally for my entire life. And I love the fact that I think the word you used was monogrammed. So I'm like, oh, man.
Did you say monogrammed mug? Which doesn't make any sense.
I don't know what I said.
You definitely said monogrammed mug.
Which take are we talking about?
No, all of them. You made that estrogen joke and the monogram joke every time.
Yeah, my wife laughed at the estrogen joke. So I'm like, she never laughs at my jokes. So I don't know. It made me a little bit insecure. But the fact that we're talking about this story as gritty, as Tarantino, as raw, using terms like, and look, my sons, who are relatively young, were sitting there watching the teaching, and you bring up the fact that Esther was pulled into the sex trade, and I mean, I just love the fact that we're talking about this in a vertical way, but that would make sense. I'm one of those kind of guys, you know, I was brought into this system years ago. And that's exactly the way that we decide to talk about things. We're going to present the truth in the way that it's presented to us, even if it cuts against our modern sensibilities. So I loved it. I love this whole series we're talking about, just the reality of the fact that these characters, you don't really applaud for some of their decisions, pulls me into that middle ground where I can't just make it a beautiful Christian greeting card. Which I love rescuing the Bible from that crap.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like kind of turning it on its head. What I was hearing from people, I guess, is, you know, while I've never heard the context of Esther like that, I didn't realize, because I think people have like a very cookie cutter VeggieTales, like, you know, this is how the story played out.
Do not disrespect VeggieTales.
I wonder if people will know what VeggieTales is.
They defined a whole generation.
I mean,
those cute little vegetables.
I wonder what vegetable Esther, did they have an Esther?
Probably.
And probably, but there's so many episodes though. It'd be hard to remember.
Okay, well, what did you think, Chase? I mean, what was your kind of initial response to the way that we set up Esther?
And it's hard for me to be surprised anymore with the directions we take things.
Nothing surprises him.
No, I'm so used to it.
I'm so unimpressed by you.
But that's what we do though. I'm not trying to give a vertical pat on the back. It's not what I'm here to do. But we usually try to dig into stories for what they actually are. And when you read the Esther story, like there's literally no other way to read that story if you're taking it for what it is. You can round the edges off and stuff like that and try to dull it, but I think that detracts from the story. You know, the power, I don't want to go too deep into the story because we got 3 more weeks to do on the series. And I don't want to spoil anything for this. I did air quotes for this thousands of year old story, but I don't know. It wasn't surprising the direction we took it, but I think that's good because I think it means we did our job right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
We talked also a lot about just kind of the context. One of the things that I enjoy that we get to do in teaching here, I think, is kind of look at Esther in her situation. We get to look at maybe the personal crisis. I think I refer to it as an identity crisis that she's going to in that point, and that may be something that would be easy to gloss over, you know, but we get to kind of pay attention to her emotions. And I think the reason that we get to draw that out right now is because a lot of us are in that place. Just kind of this lack of a daily rhythm, lack of the routine that we're typically in. Did either of y'all kind of feel that, you know, when we're talking about that in the story? Can you kind of see that where you are right now in the COVID scam of things?
Definitely. I mean, part of the backstory here too is that Drew Kleek, who's going to make his first appearance teaching the week after Easter, went through a pretty difficult season in his life not too long ago. And mm-hmm. we started talking about Easter, and man, you could just see it hit this guy. I think he was on a Zoom call with us and back before Zoom was cool, before COVID. And he was like, man, that's my story. You know, like I've drawn so much strength from that book. He was talking about it as like a, not necessarily a how-to, but basically a companion reader to being in crisis. Mm. And he's the guy that brought up this identity crisis, if I'm remembering this correctly.
Yeah,
he brought
so.
Up the identity crisis idea of like, man, she is in an identity crisis. That's what I was in when God used this book to really comfort me. And I will be honest, I have a much easier time trying to connect emotionally with the men of the Bible than I do the women. But to be able to slow down a little bit, hear a guy say that, and then read the story from that perspective has changed a lot for me. Even something we're going to talk about on our first screencast coming up soon is just the amount of time that's represented. And you put a time domain in your teaching. The amount of time that Esther has to wade through this is so much longer than we're going to be struggling with quarantine and COVID-19.
Right.
So even in that fact, it's like, whoa, she got through that. We can get through this. She didn't make every decision correctly, but she did make the most important decisions correctly. So yeah, I think there's a tremendous amount of parallels in thinking about my story right now and having a little bit of identity crisis in this one place. I'll wrap this comment up here. The things that I normally have that give me value, that validate me, are all but gone. People are sending me texts like, hey man, how you doing? And I just find myself opening up like, as a minister, I'm struggling right now because I don't have a lot of contact with people where I know I'm making a difference. And I'm kind of wondering, what's my purpose? What's my role here?
Yeah. You know?
So yeah, I'm really identifying with that identity crisis piece.
What do you think, Chase?
Yeah, I think the story, to give its just desserts, which is, I'm just trying to bring phrases in that are very underutilized on this podcast. That's my whole platform.
I appreciate that.
I think it takes a very mature point of view, or not mature, seasoned point of view to pull the things out of the story that a lot of people aren't going to. Like, I would venture most people don't notice the fact that God's not mentioned once in that book until someone points it out, you know? Like, that was the case for me. Like, you know, you kind of take it for granted. But then when you know that and when you reread the story, I think, Austin, your main point, or one of your main points of the talk is super important from that story, in that it teaches you that a lot of the times where, you know, you may have felt God was inactive or not present in your life, it just takes a little digging to look for it, you know, which is not something a lot of Christians are used to doing, or at least expecting to do. You know, they feel like God is supposed to be in your face, bam, you know, which, I mean, he does that, you know, the Bible's littered with stuff like that. But I think one of the beautiful parts of the Esther story is that it says that it shows that there's people in the Bible that also had moments where it required a little bit of digging to find how God was actually interacting in their story, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think that's one reason why this story is super attractive to me, and I even said it at the beginning, is it's this idea of how are you going to act when God's activity isn't evident. And it's even kind of got this, like, and we've talked about it in teaching a lot, like this idea of this gritty Wild West, like everything is chaos around you, but you're expected to do the right thing. Like, what does that look like when all of this is actually happening? And that seems super applicable in our world right now. You know, I think that's kind of where we find ourselves, and it's decisions that we're making daily, like here, right? Is how are we going to navigate this when there's not really parameters around, like we don't know what we're supposed to do right now, you know? So how are we acting on that? That's very interesting to me.
Yeah, pulled out of one context and put into another. And on top of that, there's more layers of tragedy. So there's in the story of Esther, there's national tragedy. There's also personal tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Those things happen based on how the story reads, almost simultaneously.
Right.
Then she's brought into a family member's home. That family member does the right thing by taking her in. But then you pointed out, like, wait a minute.
How did she get here?
Was she paraded in front of these men that were looking for beautiful women? Or right. did it just so happen to be? Like, how does this work out? One thing I've learned in reading the Bible is if it leaves out a detail, oftentimes it's because it's not of consequence. Mm. Regardless, this guy Mordecai shows up. But think about Esther's posture in that he's able to convince her of certain things. I'm just, full disclosure here, if I had gone through what Esther had gone through in some shape or form, I think I would be so angry and jaded for so long.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would be able to take solid advice from anybody. So it's been a big personal challenge for me in seeing this entry into the story with Esther for what it is, you know, and you've got this, the woman who has a refusal. I find that juxtaposition very intriguing that you have we start off the story by a woman who's like, no, I'm not doing this. And then you get over to Esther who gets a place and Esther is continually saying a yes. I think with this sense of hope, which just totally baffles me, that she feels like she can make a difference, even if it means she's got to sacrifice her life. Again, I think it just shows the beauty of the Bible, actually. And these are some of the oldest parts of the Bible that we've been discussing.
Yeah.
The Jewish people are phenomenal storytellers. And when we take those stories and reduce them down to just practical application, or as you were referencing earlier, Chase, just sound bites for such a time as this, we'd only reduce the Bible. I think we become, and this is a big phrase, but I think we become ungodly interpreters when we do that. And this is the banner that we actually live under, the responsibility as teachers. We have to be very good at interpreting what God intended originally, what the people intended originally, and also what God intends now. And that's where COVID-19 and current circumstances come in. It's definitely a trick. We don't get it right every time, but I think we can't go wrong if we try to take the story for exactly what it's presenting to us. And that gets us in trouble a lot.
Well, I think that also brings out the importance of, and we don't talk about this enough, but having a teaching team, not a teaching pastor, you know? Like there's three guys in a room each week trying their best to connect with God and unpack something that he's put on somebody's heart in some kind of way. And a lot of times it's not even, you know, you're trying to go in a story that maybe we haven't covered before, and you guys do a lot of digging, but none of it's in solidarity, you know? You guys are working together. Which I think is a good example for how we need to operate as a community, you know, whether it's small groups or smaller groups,
right?
However you guys are meeting, you know?
Yeah, this is on my mind because I saw this yesterday, again, just consuming so much church digitally. I saw a guy start his talk, and this is what he said, and I instantly turned it off. Mm. He said, I'm so excited about the word the Holy Spirit has given me for this week. I was like, done, done, like, you are in my opinion, you're in a very elite class of people if you are hearing that clearly from the Holy Spirit about what needs to be communicated in isolation every week. And in fact, I think you'd really have to prove it to me over a lengthy period of time that you're not just using that as an introductory phrase because you thought of something and you want to say it. Yeah, so we put things through the paces, and as we discuss a lot on this podcast so far, the things that each of us say are informed by each of us. You know, so a lot of stuff that's coming in that I'm going to say in a few weeks, Drew initiated, Austin initiated, and then we have to take it to our personal study and we have to feel right with God that it's something that we can communicate to the people. But there are tons of filters before something is actually spoken from stage or
well,
in front of a camera.
You guys backtrack a lot too. Like you guys will have a whole talk planned out coming out of a teaching team. And then this is where that Holy Spirit part does come in.
Right.
You guys will get to Thursday or Friday and say, we were part of the way there, but I had to back up to the 60-yard line and rework how I'm going to actually get to the end zone here. And it's, you know, and that's not every week. You know, a lot of time you guys really unpack a talk all the way to the end zone together, but it's rarely, if ever, do you guys do the whole 100 yards by yourself, you know?
Yeah, never. And that's one thing that I've enjoyed about just kind of getting to come into this culture in the last year is it takes a tremendous strain off of you to know that it's not all hinging on you, and it never should anyway. But that's the way, just because I've taught in other environments, that's the way that it is in a lot of places. And so you talk about this guy, I don't know who this is. I really think that, and I can tell you this from experience just in seminary, that a lot of pastors are brought up to believe that, hey, this is what's going to happen. It is hinging on you. The Holy Spirit is going to talk to you, and you are telling everybody else in the room. And that's just, I don't know that you can live with that kind of empowerment. You know, I don't know that that's valid.
Yeah, it leads to a lot of really nasty stuff, which we don't have time to go into. But my basic premise is it cuts against the grain of the Bible, in that we see scripturally that it transitions from a person like Moses who meets with God individually, mm-hmm. comes out of that meeting place and delivers the word of God to people, to a more New Testament approach, which is the Spirit resides within each of us. It's very communal. Mm-hmm. You have certain people who are basically pushed forward. But even those guys, if you investigate the life of Paul, he spent years studying with other people before he launched off into this campaign. The Bible, unfortunately, because the way that it reads often, and this is the case in Esther, presents a compressed timeline for what actually happened. So, right,
yeah, out of necessity.
Yeah, but here's the, and I think we can probably wrap this part of the conversation up by saying these two things. People in this community say these two phrases often. I've never seen that story that way. Mm-hmm. They say that a lot. I mean, and by a lot, I mean multiple people every week.
Weekly.
Yeah. The second thing that we hear a lot is, man, that was just for me today. Well, the reason that we're hitting those two targets so consistently is because we're having to do those two things for each other in our teaching team. And we should say, as well as the staff, we bring some of these talks before the staff and say, hey, this is what we're thinking. Does this match who we are? Does it match who God says that
he
is?
What we did for the first time this year, like the entire curriculum for the entire year, the whole staff approved.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it was stuff that didn't make the cut.
Yeah. It's crazy the amount of filters that it goes through to get to stage on Sunday. But I think that at a very high level, things that we say from stage all the time, you know, this is, you know, you're walking through this as community, that takes place in every corner of the ministry that we do at Vertical Church, including teaching, and that's a really rare thing.
Yeah, it's a mark of our organization. So I don't know, I guess usually we're getting on this podcast talking about some things that may be confusing or controversial, but I don't know that Esther has really presented those items so far.
Not yet, but as we, again, this is just the intro to the series, I think that we'll be able to look back in a couple of weeks and say, you know, there will be a lot more digging to do there. But really, we only got to introduce Esther. You know, some of the other characters that are coming up in the story, I can't wait to get into this story, because the way that, like, the narrative of it overall is just crazy. The irony in some of it is just, it's so good. So I'm really excited for it.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Da-da-da. No. We do drums.
Yeah, that's really that already
was
happened.
Yeah, that was it. That was good.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, Austin, you know what that, there's a gong going off in the distance. You know what that means?
What does that mean, Chase?
It's time for people to ask us anything.
Oh. Anything at all.
Cool.
I kind of hear like Family Feud theme music going on behind the.
That'd be great.
Ask
Could you
anything.
Add some of that?
No, we'll get sued.
We know Chase can't do Family Feud.
I love Family Feud. No, that's not.
Unfair.
Our students can't do Family Feud.
Unfair.
All right, sorry. Go ahead, Austin. What's our question?
Okay, so we kind of boiled down a few questions.
Boiled down.
Is that Arkansas?
You just can't say that if you're from the South without sounding Southern.
Yeah, bowled. I mean, if you said, like, we boiled down.
We boiled down.
You're fraud. Boiled down.
Anyway. So we kind of put together a few questions that we've kind of all been receiving into one that we think encompasses, you know,
boiled down,
all of it. The question that we got, or that we're answering today, is what is the balance between being informed and trusting your faith during the COVID-19 breakup?
I feel like that can expand literally. It could be outside of
COVID-19
though.
Absolutely.
But I think specifically, yeah. There's a reason people are asking those questions.
Just for the world in general, they're like, how much of this can I believe?
Yeah. So just to make sure I understand the question clearly, being informed would be like, I'm on news outlets a lot. I'm paying attention to feeds of news outlets or people who are commenting on current events, looking at the map, being caught up in that. And then there seems to be this other side of me, if I'm a Jesus follower, you should be approaching it a little bit differently. Yeah. That's the tension in
there,
the question.
There seems to be two like camps on this, at least from my social media outlets. There seems to be the, I'm on the couch, I'm continually scrolling and looking at the numbers rack up. And then there's the other side that I think everybody envisions, like evangelical churches, like we're all not scared and like handling snakes or whatever you do. Like we're not worried at all.
I do know people are pretty pissed off at these churches that are still meeting.
I drove by a church locally this weekend.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair.
No, I meant I don't understand why people are still meeting.
I don't get it either.
Yeah, I think that they think they're acting on faith, which seems very...
This feels very timely to the question we just just asked.
Yeah. Do you guys feel like when God sees that I just got his head in his hands, like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get a gold star for still meeting.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, God, my personal opinion is God bless people with the ability to be doctors for a reason, you know, or
statisticians for a reason.
Yeah. Right. Like, listen to them.
Okay, so back to the question, though.
Sorry.
So you have people who are consuming this, and what I've seen is that that side of it leads to a lot of anxiety.
Mm.
What I've seen on the other side of it is that side leads to a lot of ignorance.
Ignorance. Yeah.
So it's like,
we all agreed on one word right there individually. Right.
Do I choose between anxiety or ignorance? So there has to be some sort of balance. I think when people are asking us this question as like a pastoral question, they're trying to get us to say, here's the balance.
Yeah.
And balance is hard to strike. I mean, so what is our advice here?
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous that people come and ask us often, hey, what should we do?
Like,
I mean, if they looked at the three of us, though, that would not.
Like, let me find somebody that could actually answer that for you.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but here we go. It's this is our podcast.
Yeah,
so
you
asked.
So we're here.
Yeah.
This could be real wrong. We should give that disclosure.
Yeah.
We can be wrong.
Yeah, don't
so
act
should
on
I,
anything we do.
Do you want me to lead out and just say what I do, and then you guys could argue whether that's good or bad?
Go for it.
Please.
All right,
we do it every week when you teach.
Right.
Real like, behind the scenes.
Literally, we just described Vertical Church. So what I do is I check news outlets roughly twice a week. Because I feel like that's really when the news actually changes, new information coming out. Otherwise, you're just hearing different takes on the same statistics that have been picked by the large media outlets, which I totally believe in that conspiracy. I'll feed you that, Austin.
If you
get on YouTube and you search news phrases that are repeated all over the country, they're literally repeated word for word.
Sound bites.
So all this stuff is being dictated, but... So I check news outlets about twice a week because I feel like I can stay informed on the stuff that matters that way. My faith, I'm checking in on every single day. That's the thing that I'm tuning in on the most because it allows me to do two things. It allows me to read what I feel like God is up to in the world right now and also to read what God is up to in me personally right now. And those things change, in my opinion, way more rapidly than two times a week. I've got to be checking in on that. So I have to stay informed so that I don't operate as like just having the blindfold on and this thing's going to pass and be over, because then that disconnects me from the people around me. But I can't pay too much attention to it because I'm a Enneagram 6 and I deal with generally a lot of internal fear that's not very founded already.
Yeah.
So if information is being fed to me that's false, then it can take me down a really, really bad trail.
I love that you bring that up, just difference in our personalities, because I'm not an Enneagram 6.
You're the opposite.
Yeah, I am. I'm an Enneagram 8. And so I hear people, I don't know, even taking general precaution, and my initial reaction is just quit, like stop being dumb, you know, or people aren't doing things. And so I guess what I've had to struggle with is, you know, looking at media constantly, because I'm a consumer. Like I know that that's what I'm doing. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm reading all the articles. I'm doing all of this. I've kind of had to transition out of that, like you've said, but also finding credible sources.
Yeah.
And if you're going to the two big sources, that's not the way to do that. Everybody has an agenda, you know? So if you're checking in two times a week, I think being clear about who you're looking at is very important.
Yeah, that makes... I should have said that before. Like, I'm not going to Fox News.
Or CNN.
Any of them.
I'm looking up the CDC.
Right.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
You know, so to get those kind of things, to get accurate numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think the other side of that, you said you're checking in on you often, and something even that we just talked about is our community, right? It's easy for me to just listen to podcasts or just read articles or just whatever. And so I've tried to set a goal for myself in, you know, if I'm reading an article, then I need to be checking in on three different people, you know, because it's so easy for us to sink into this place of isolation out of that fear. And I don't even really like the term social distancing. That's kind of the opposite of what we should be doing, right? We need to be physically distant. To be socially distant means that our community is growing anemic, and that's not what we want.
That's breaking down.
Yeah.
That's a great point, because in that you get information, like Chase is kind of the information guy, and I trust what Chase is telling me based on what he's consumed, because he's already filtered out a lot of the junk.
Right.
And he's bringing me the stuff that, okay, that I can pay attention to, because I know Chase has kind of fought through all the stuff that's no good.
Well, that stems from, I have to bring it to my perspective now. It's about me now.
Can we talk about me?
I have to filter out the positive spins on everything, because that's what I'm like desperately looking for, is like the optimistic take on where we are, which sometimes can be healthy, but it's not very realistic a lot of times.
Especially in a pandemic.
Exactly. When things are, you know, inherently not great.
You mean it's not going to be done by Easter?
No.
Oh, okay.
I hate to tell you that now.
Oh, okay.
Even though I told you that already.
Shoot.
What I have to do, yeah, it's kind of like what Ben was saying. I have to dig for the people that I know have all the facts and are being realistic, not negative.
Mm.
Like a lot of the news outlets have the facts, but they want the clickable spin on it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, I need, like, people like Dr. Fauci, like, the dude that's, like, the correspondent for the entire...
Don't you love him?
He's incredible.
Oh, my
if
gosh.
Nothing else for his
you
voice.
Know he's, you know he's 79?
And he's just and running
he's a marathon
around the
runner?
Yeah, he's awesome.
Oh.
I've boiled it down, to bring back that phrase. It's like, if it's not coming from a scientist or a doctor or something like that, then I'm just not listening to it. And it's got to be like their voice, not like a CNN's quote of what Dr. Fauci said in paragraph 3, you know, that sounds good for the story they're trying to spin. You know, I want the whole deal or the whole interview with this guy so that I know that my expectations of what's happening can be realistic, and then I can have my optimistic spin.
Yeah.
For my own personal deal, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. Like, people tend to do that, hey, this is the truth and it's down here somewhere. Really what they're telling you is this is what we want you to get out of this. On the flip side, you see churches doing the same thing when they say this is what God wants you to get out of that. Mm-hmm. I get super wary of that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, if I see somebody telling me this is what God wants for you out of this, I'm like, hang on. We need to be careful with that, you know.
God. I'm glad I'm not the only one in that camp, because I've struggled as a leader of a church not coming out with this huge, here's what God's up to right now.
Oh, man.
I'm
yeah.
like, whoa, you're going to get me a little bit nervous if I'm trying to point out this huge universal thing that God decided to do through a pandemic.
Well, and people act like this hasn't happened before. Like, I'm going to step on toes, but my least favorite thing in the world is when they're like, oh, it's fires in Australia and locusts in Africa. It's the end of the world. And I'm like, that's all happened before.
I have had an end of the world question, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
It says we won't know.
Yeah, right.
What more do you want from us?
I can't tell you how much that comes in. Do you think? And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know. I hope I'm surprised. Suddenly there's a bright light and, oh, I'm here.
I've just started saying, no. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Let's quicker.
Wouldn't that be great?
It is one of my favorite questions to answer, because I can just say, I don't know, and I feel justified.
Yeah. It says right here. Yeah.
I really don't know. So to summarize what you're saying, Chase, like, if you want to know what's going on with the virus, you check in with the scientist. If you want to know what God's up to, you check in
personally.
You check in personally. Yeah. And you're going to take, hopefully, the people that are listening. And if you're not in this camp, then you can find them. They're out there. There are trustworthy spiritual people that are speaking about what's going on through this pandemic. And you can literally take the same filters to those people that you're taking to the news outlets. If I see something that is going to an extreme, either way too far to the negative or way too far to the positive, I'm going to encourage people to immediately discount those sources.
Yep.
And probably never, ever, ever, ever return to those people again.
Yep.
Because you're seeing their true colors right now. Someone who is giving spiritual commentary about what's going on planet Earth right now that isn't striking a balance between fear and faith and certainty and uncertainty, they're just showing their true colors. And I won't go on a soapbox right now, but some of the guys I'm watching that are at huge, I mean huge churches are just showing their colors. They're getting out there being cheerleaders about this thing or another. They're taking stories from the Bible that don't have anything to
out of context
with the pandemic. They're not they're not concerned about context at all. These men, I haven't seen any women do it recently, but these men are showing their true colors and how they built their mega church kingdoms in the first place. I love it. I love that it's coming out right now.
Man. Yeah. And I think, just to get dark real quick, people need to hear that people are going to die, that you know, or if not that, people you know are going to get sick, and it's going to be scary. What I think on the faith side of things, you have to operate from God has his best interest in mind, which inherently means your best interest. It may not be what you want, you know, just to get frank there, but at the end of the day, God's on the throne, and it's going to be all right by his definitions, not ours.
So you said it. Can you accept it?
I have to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think fear is a natural thing, but I think it's crystal clear that it takes work for that not to be the driving force in how we're operating. You know, it's hard. You know, I mean, there are times during this where I feel scared, especially with a, you know, 10-week-old. But at the end of the day, I have to double down on what it is that I believe, you know, and there are times where it slips. And that's where your advice comes in, where you check in every day on where I'm coming from. But I don't want to lie to myself about what's real and what isn't, you know, that's not fair.
Yeah.
To me, to my wife, to my community, it's not fair. So.
Yeah, I can 100% agree with that. And I'll tell you what's going on in my world right now as I'm spending time with God. The things that he's showing me and teaching me don't have to do with COVID. They have to do with leadership. And that's tremendously comforting for me because I'm like, well, this is what God wants me to do right now is lead.
Yep.
And I know that because he's talking to me about it. Then I have to kind of lay aside, does that mean lead for the next 3 weeks until I contract COVID and die? Maybe.
Maybe.
Does it mean I'm going to get through this? Maybe.
Yep.
But if God's being that intentional in what he's showing me sitting at my home office in the morning, then I can trust whatever the end state is.
Yep.
You know, do I want to die and leave my family? No. But if I do, my faith and belief in the authority, purpose, and power of God covers even if I'm absent.
Yep.
That perhaps is the most troubling thing for most Americans right now, is that we believe that we cannot be replaced.
Yeah.
Or that we are God. And this virus is taking us face to face with that idea to say, look, man, this world's going to continue after you're gone.
Yep.
So whenever that happens, you're not in control of anyway. So I think that allows us to set the fear aside and say, this is something you brought up earlier, Austin, in one of your blog posts, like, let's get living.
Yeah.
Let's start leading through this. Let's show what it looks like to be informed, but also have faith and to strike that balance. But we're not going to get that straight like one day and it's settled.
Right.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, it's a daily thing.
It is a daily thing. So I think really the summary of the answer here is that you have to be checking in with your community and with God and with the information and try to strike that balance as best you can every day.
Yeah. At the end of the day, honesty with yourself and your community. Man, all right, let's get to the fun stuff.
Woo-hoo. Can we put this podcast on an upswing?
For real. They got deep quickly.
Fine, I'll do it. Actually, no, Ben, I want you to start. What's your recommends for the week? We're going quick.
Yeah, recommends. Well, we have to say this every week. Thanks, Janice.
Thank you, Janice.
Thank you, Janice, my mother-in-law. So I'm going to roll through. These are like heavily curated for me. I've been thinking about these for hours. And you're going to be able to tell when I read this list off because they're awesome. So I'm going to start with Need.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Sure.
Please. I mean, we can go in any order we want. It's just four things.
No one cares.
So I'm going to start with need. And this is really in connection with the toilet paper crisis that's going on inside of every home.
Did you buy a bidet?
No, I had one recommended because a friend of mine has one, but that's a long story. So I think if you can't acquire a bidet, or you're just not the DIY where you can replace your friendly...
Super soakers are incredible.
Run-of-the-mill toilet, yes, but it requires a second party.
It's getting weird in quarantine.
Yeah, it's getting weird. So I'm going to recommend a good probiotic, because a good probiotic is going to solve a lot of problems you have in your life right now.
You know what's fixed every problem I have as far as bathroom concerns go?
Not going to restaurants?
I haven't eaten fast food since this thing started. I've been golden.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. I never even thought...
Well, part of my problem is I've been, not lately, but at the beginning of all this, I was going over to my parents' place, and man, does my mom cook different than my wife. So it's like I've got this really ultra healthy, leave things out of recipes wife, and then basically Paula Deen as a mother. Ooh. So everything starts with two sticks
of
butter.
Hey, we were talking about balance in the last segment.
That's right. That's, yeah, that's what you need. Right there.
Yeah, but I mean, a good probiotic. Look, if you don't know about probiotics already... Just
where have you been?
Pause the podcast and go look those things up. They're not hard to find, right? Okay. And they're incredibly good for you. So especially if you have a medical history like I do. Okay, my where.
True.
My where. This is going to be connected to staying motivated in your home gym setup. Because everybody is so sick of lunges and burpees and push-ups and sit-ups. And it all just feels like this is the worst part of COVID. If you do have the motivation to work out, you're just doing the same junk over and over again. My suggestion is to wear a heart rate monitor, because I have one of these and it really drives me. That number drives me. The calorie burn, the heart rate, just being able to geek out over the metrics of how your workout
went.
That's
a good one.
It just makes it feel more serious. So yesterday my heart rate hit 189. I'm pretty proud of that. If COVID doesn't kill me, then my at-home gym will.
Man, so that's what we're all striving for.
Yeah. We're all just trying to take Ben's job.
What got Ben? COVID? No, he did five burpees in a row, dropped dead. So, yeah, so I think for the wear is the heart rate monitor. I know that they're not essential, but here's a tip for online shopping. If you get outside of Amazon, things are getting to you pretty fast. Just sorry, Amazon.
It is
that's
true.
How it works.
It's true. Except for B&H. They're currently screwing us.
Yeah, really. They're supposed to be here yesterday.
That's neither here nor there.
Yeah, they've been so good to us in days past.
Yes, just not during the pandemic.
Okay, so here's a want. This is something I believe, Chase, you actually showed this to me a couple of years ago, and I've just gotten back into it. I don't know if you guys are like me, but I'm consuming a tremendous amount of music these days because I'm at home.
Did you finally find Spotify?
Yeah. You can stream CDs.
He found LimeWire.
Yeah. Napster, man, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, I've been consuming a lot of music. I'm sitting there working. I'm listening to music. So if I'm writing, I'm usually listening to a little bit of jazz. If I'm doing woodworking, I'm listening to a little bit of blues. But I stumbled into this, and I found myself, like, watching one after the other after the other. Make sure I'm saying this right. On YouTube, there are vocal isolations.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you can hear these...
Vocal
incredibly
classic
songs, and they strip everything out except for the vocals and stuff that you would think is just pop music. You listen to this guy sing or this girl sing, you're like, oh my gosh.
They're incredible.
That
They're
is
so good.
Unbelievable. Like, you take guys like Freddie Mercury, right? And you think,
his are nuts, man.
The thing with that guy is they just came around at the right time and they had the band and the blah, blah, blah. But when you listen to that guy sing, you're like, no wonder this guy was famous.
The best one I've ever found, and it's the first one that really convinced me that, like, this stuff is worth listening to, it's still my favorite since, is Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam. His isolated vocals of Even Flow.
Really?
Oh my gosh, man. Dude. That dude is an underrated singer.
I'll have to check
and
that
out.
And
he's pretty highly rated, and he's still underrated. It's so good.
It feels like a lot of famous singers actually have to kind of downplay how good they are.
You forget, like, I thought this with Katy Perry a while back. Like, for all the flaws she has and how weird and unsettling her music is, her vocals, that girl,
Chase has a vendetta against Katy Perry.
That was strong.
She's gotten weird, I'll be honest. I like her old stuff, but she's such a good singer, and there's so many people like that that you forget because they're so paparazzi pop bass that you're like, they're actually nuts at singing.
They get a weird haircut and you're like, Katie, what's going on, sweetheart?
Yeah.
Yeah. So isolated vocals, that's...
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Awesome, go.
It's me? Cool. Yeah. So recommends for the week. I thought Ben was going to steal mine as far as where we were close. I'm going to recommend that if you're out in public, you know, being a responsible social distance person.
No, not social, physical distance.
Physical distance.
We like that? Okay, we'll keep
it. Keep it.
If you are trying to distance yourself physically while on a running trail, I'm doing the same thing. Please wear all of your clothes. I recommend that you wear a shirt. Because there have been people in these shorts with no shirts on. I'm like, are we seeing how much we can get away with? If you can wear a mask, where are the rest of your clothes? I don't want to be 6 feet apart from you without clothes on.
This should be a whole episode of the people who shed clothing during exercise.
Oh my gosh.
Where does that start and how do we stop it?
It's gotten ridiculous. People have been in their homes and they're getting crazy. Recommends what you should want. I don't know. I kind of want more snacks. That's where I'm at right now. I recommend that you stock up whenever you make yourself go to the grocery store.
There was almost a fist fight in my house yesterday over Nutella.
I get that.
That's currently winning the day at my house.
Yeah. I don't know how there's any of that left at Kroger right now with everybody at their houses.
Well, the truth is Owen, my oldest, hid it on the top shelf from Shepherd, my youngest, and then Shepherd discovered it yesterday. Mm. And that's fun to watch.
It's good stuff.
The whole reason to have kids.
Yeah. It's worth it right there. It's like cage fight over Nutella.
Mm.
Need, we've said that you need entertainment right now because...
No, that's not what we said. That's what you said.
You need entertainment.
Oh, sorry.
And I'm recommending that if you are an adult and you need entertainment, that you watch Ozark on Netflix. If you aren't already watching...
You need to give a filter to that because not everybody's going to be into that.
It is... Okay, so it's Jason Bateman who is...
The perfect actor.
Oh my gosh, he's a genius. He's a great comedian, but then... They put him in Ozark where he's like a money laundering in the drug cartel. It is dark, and I will tell you it is a dark series, but if that's kind of your thing, if you like that Breaking Bad type thing, this blows Breaking Bad out of the water. And they just put the newest series the new season on Netflix, and it was better than the first two. It is so freaking good, I could watch it all over again. So if that's your jam, then go ahead and do that. Last thing, you know I have a read. This week I read a book called On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder. The subtitle of that is 20 Lessons That We Learned from the 20th Century. So basically he's talking about, here are 20 things that we learned from Stalin or Hitler or Mussolini, you know, in that time period that will kind of give us some red flags as to when tyranny is popping up. You see people give sound bites all the time when they talk about like how socialist parts of our government are right now. Fair warning, none of those are in this book, but it is really interesting given the time period that we're living in right now. So.
Shoot, man, we live in a democracy. Yeah. We waste my time with
that's
tyranny stuff.
We live in a republic.
Whatever.
Okay.
You can read it in like 2 hours. It's a good book.
Yeah. Read in like 2 hours.
It sounds like that's one of those things that once you read it, you have the curse of knowledge and you're going to see it everywhere.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
The 2 days a week that I'm allowed to look at media this week will not be the same.
There's a tyrant. They're brewing a tyrant.
Yep.
I see you, Mark Zuckerberg.
Censorship. What?
Give me back my data. All right. So I don't have that many. So where I have them on right now, it is the Climacool Adidas. They're either track or soccer pants. They're the dry fit, three line down the side, zipper on the bottom.
A classic.
If you don't own them yet, they're as good as joggers, if not better. They can work as pajamas. You can go out in them if you wear a decent shirt and you kind of dress it up a little bit with some nice shoes.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
By the way, same take as joggers. That would be fat camp for me.
No, I think these would do better for you than joggers.
Yeah, they stretch.
You should give them a try. So my want, what do you want? I think that you, like I am, should go back through Arrested Development with me.
Ooh, speaking of Jason Bateman.
Yeah, I didn't give it.
Are they shooting people in the bathroom at Arrested Development, or is less violent?
It's vastly different.
Okay, good.
Just speaks to
his I never
talent.
Watched it the first time through, so I'm going to make the commitment during this physical distancing time to go back through and watch it when I can. What you need, to buy some waffle / pancake batter that's like the instant stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
Rachel and I, my wife, have been wearing out waffles.
What kind are you using? What are you?
It's the great value buttermilk waffle / pancake.
Yeah, that's what
thing.
I'm talking about. We've been making the Kodiak cake stuff.
See, we like the Kodiaks.
I like it, but
it's not the same.
There's
I've had
way
both.
Less sugar.
Yeah,
in a Kodiak cake.
Yeah,
that's a point.
And if you do it, don't use water. Use milk. Always use milk.
Oh.
Unless your wife is Cami Derrick, who swears it's the devil.
Now we're gonna have to bring her on this podcast to explain
she's
mammals
make
milk.
The rounds. Yeah, I think that's all. Yeah, forget Reeds. I don't have a Reed.
Those are solid. So, do you have to buy two pair of Adidas pants, like pre waffle, post waffle?
No,
they stretch.
They stretch and they wash well, and they wipe off real well. Most dry fit stuff, you can get a wet paper towel and just kind of.
So if you spill your syrup,
yeah, or your cane sauce.
Mm. Oh, shut up! I can't wait for cane sauce.
I miss it so
Bring
much.
Back canes.
R.I.P.
Bring back canes.
Yeah. Okay. Are we done with this thing?
That's a wrap.
I believe so.
See ya.